We live in a time where certain conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So to push back against this culture of silence, I sit down every other week with a different guest to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name is Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody, for part two in our two-part series. If you didn't listen to last week's episodes, we are spending a couple of having a couple conversations around what feminism looks like and its intersection with belief and faith. I'm really excited to have a special guest co-host for these two episodes, and that's Claire Swinarski of the Catholic Feminist Podcast. Claire, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Can you tell people a little bit about why you started the Catholic Feminist Podcast?
Sure. So I started the podcast really out of a place of frustration. We had just had an election. I don't know if you knew that. We had a presidential election, and it was just a horrible time to be a Catholic feminist because everyone was yelling. And I couldn't understand why people didn't see the way that Catholicism and feminism blended so beautifully together. And to be honest, I also was really fed up with my day job with one of my clients. And I was like, I need an outlet. I need something creative to do. And I had been waiting and waiting for someone to start this podcast because I loved podcasts. And I was thinking, who is going to go out and create this podcast where they can talk to these amazing Catholic feminists like Abby Johnson and Leah Jacobson, and they can get involved with Catholic Relief Services. And we can bring in all of these topics about why the Catholic Church is so pro-woman. Like, why isn't anyone doing this? And finally, I was like, I love to interview people. I love to chat with people. I love feminism. And I think I should just do this. So I did it. And I just kind of kicked it off on International Women's Day 2017. And that's kind of where it started. But it's been a really great place for me to learn more about the intersection between the Catholic Church and then these modern feminist topics, because I think people would be surprised about some of the things that the church has to say about women. And I think that people would be surprised to see how many Catholic women are out there really making a difference and moving the needle and fighting for good. And it's just been a crazy, crazy experience so far.
So before we get into our conversation with Devin today, the interview that I did with her, I would love to hear more about that, because I think a lot of people view feminism as like dismantling the patriarchy, and the Catholic Church, if nothing else, is certainly a patriarchy. And so how do you resolve those two things, and how is that connected? How is the church pro-women in your perspective?
Sure. So I think right away when you say patriarchy, a lot of people have a lot of connotations with it. And the church is such an emotional thing, right? Whether you're Catholic or not, I feel like everyone has this really emotional response to the Catholic Church. And I think what it comes down to me is, I guess the big obvious question is like, women can't be priests, so Catholics can't be feminists. I mean, to just cut through the bullshit to the chase. That's like what people think a lot, right? Women can't be priests, ergo Catholic Church, they hate feminists. But I think that's a really narrow way of looking at leadership. The priest is a leader in the parish, absolutely, but he's not the only leader. There's so many other people involved making decisions, leading people, guiding people, teaching people. There's not just one form of leadership in the Catholic Church. And to be a leader also doesn't necessarily mean to be in charge, right? To lead means to be leading people to heaven. We can do that in all kinds of ways. I think I'm a leader, even though I work for myself. I am a team of one, but I think that I lead people closer to heaven, or at least I sure as heck try to. So I think that that's just a really narrow way of looking at leadership. I also think that there's a big component of faith that has to come in where you just trust the church. And it's so hard to get to that place. Yeah. And if you're not there, it's really hard to hear that and be like, what? So you want me to stop learning? No, not at all. We're not Scientologists, right? We don't ban books. Mm-hmm. Like, go out and learn for sure. Go out and seek truth. But there's a big part of me that says if the church makes a decision like that, priests can only be men, I'm going to trust that decision because I think that Jesus founded the church and I think that he picked Peter. And I think that we've had papal succession after that. And so when the church makes decisions, I tend to trust that they are good, even if they don't make perfect sense to me. But I also think on that same note, that doesn't mean that the church doesn't have growing to do when it comes to involving women in leadership roles. And someone who's obviously been quite the rock star at this would be Pope Francis, appointing women to positions in the Vatican to help really bring that feminine leadership along and to help bring in the gifts of women into decision-making within the church, because we do still have a role to play. Just because that role isn't consecrating the Eucharist doesn't mean it's not a super important role.
Yeah.
And so I think that you can simultaneously want to dismantle this idea of men constantly being in charge and men making all the decisions and still love the fatherhood that is the priesthood. And so that's kind of how I reconcile those in my mind.
No, I think that's amazing. A couple of weeks ago, I was actually did an interview with Lisa Stadler from Disagreeable Subjects, who it's this politically oriented podcast that's based out of Seattle. I met her at a really cool event that happened up here that was just a bunch of creative people getting together from all different backgrounds. And she basically does a very similar thing where she picks a political topic and gets people to sit down and talk about these polarizing issues. She actually interviewed Destiny for one on abortion, also two who we talked to last week. But it was so, like, when I was listening to her, one of the things that was so hard for me to hear was the way she's got this strong prophetic voice that she was trying to speak out and really lead in her religious community when she was younger, in her church. And it was totally shut down because she was a woman. And that's such a hard thing for me to hear because I don't understand that, right? As a Catholic guy, I don't understand, like, all my early faith role models were women. I didn't have an adult faith role model. Not that this is not a criticism of my father or of any of the other men in my life, but a really strong one until I was in high school. All of the people who taught me about faith beyond my parish priest were all women. And so it's just nutty to me that is sometimes a challenge for people, though I understand it's a very, very real one. I have another question for you. As I was talking to our interviewee today, Devin from the Hellbent podcast, which I think is such a great name for the Threshold, like, fans out there. I think it was like, I was like, oh, I got to talk to somebody who's on a podcast called Hellbent, like, which is so much fun to just think about how people respond to that. But one of the things she mentioned is that her mom was not one of her heroes growing up. Like, was your mom one of your heroes growing up? What was your relationship with her like?
My mom is like my best friend. That's so corny and gross to say, but my mom absolutely was one of my heroes. My mom wasn't super actively Catholic growing up. Like, I had kind of a strange Catholic upbringing. We kind of went through phases. Like, we didn't go to church necessarily every Sunday. I don't feel like I got this rock solid faith formation growing up by any means, but I got a rock solid feminist foundation growing up. Absolutely. And that was from my mom. And she was just always doing these crazy things. Like, she was a public school teacher. And one time she took my winter coat and gave it to one of her students in her class. And I was like getting ready for school. I was like, Mom, where's my coat? And she's like, oh, I brought it because blah, blah, needed it. And I was like, well, I need it, Mom. And she was like, I think you can go one day without a coat because you're so lucky that your mom can afford to take you to JCPenney tonight and buy you a new one. And you can go one day without one and thinking about all the people who don't have coats. Like, she was always doing stuff like that. And I count that as so fundamental to the way I grew up seeing the world. And she just made me an empathetic person who thought about what other people were going through and who could get into other people's headspaces. And now I'm like the adult woman who calls her mom like three times a day. Like, we talk about the dumbest stuff, but it's your mom's the only one who cares about, like, the chicken being on sale at the grocery store. So if I have to tell someone that, that's who I call. But yeah, my mom was my hero growing up. She still is. She's amazing. And she's actually, like, it's been cool to see her dive a lot more into her faith the past few years. She, like, led a Bible study at our church last year, which was not something I ever thought she would do. So it's really cool to see her spiritual journey.
So let me ask you another question that I don't know how you respond to. Have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons before?
No, I haven't. But I'm married to a big nerd who has. No offense.
From your limited knowledge of Dungeons and Dragons, if you had to pick a class or race, what would you pick?
It's so limited. I don't even know what that means. All right, okay, so but I have nerdy cred. Like, we play Catan all the time. That's really nerdy.
That's like intro nerd. Like, I mean, that's like nerd, like pre-nerd warm-up.
I'm working on it.
So whether or not you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, whether or not your mom is your hero, no matter what David Sedaris story may be your favorite, Devin from the Hellbent Podcast and I get into that and so much more in this conversation, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Hi, Devin. How's it going today?
Great. Great. So my name is Devin Handy, and I am the producer and co-host of the feminist political podcast, Hellbent. We've been live for about 14 months now, and we've amassed a pretty sizable following. Apparently, female voices in politics really resonates with people in these times. So it's been a lot of fun. I've met some really interesting people, and I'm really excited to be here.
I am excited to have you on. I'm excited for our guest to get to hear kind of about your journey, who you are, and kind of what has shaped what you believe. I want to ask you a couple questions first to help people get to know you a little bit better. And the first one is, who were your heroes or heroines growing up?
Ooh, good question. So I've always been a huge fan of Coretta Scott King, which is Dr. King's wife. She was an activist in her own right and really stood on her own, especially after her husband died. She continued his work and remained politically active until her death. And I thought that was really strong. And I've always liked the women behind the bigger, sort of more well-known names in public life. So I've always thought she was very interesting. This might be a little cliche, but I've always been a fan of Hillary Clinton. She was one of the first women elected out of New York and to Senate. And her comment about not staying home to bake cookies while her husband was the president changed my life, I think. Hearing a woman say that you didn't have to subscribe to these sort of gender norms was really important for me as a kid, when I was a little kid. So she was really important to me. And let's see, heroes. So my mother wasn't my hero when I was a kid, because kids are awful. But looking back on my mother and what she did, I'm the oldest of four, and my dad traveled for work for months at a time. So she was basically raising four children on her own. And since becoming a mother myself, I have a lot more respect for what that means and what she did for us. So especially, she passed over the holidays this year. So there's been a lot of introspection on my relationship with my mother and coming to see her as a force in my life.
What's the one thing you think your mom really imparted to you that you use on a regular basis, whether that's a skill or a value?
Table manners. I know it sounds silly, but she was very pushy about manners and very pushy about table manners. And I think at the time I hated it. It was awful. But I think what she was really getting at was, be respectful of the people around you and your surroundings, and a little bit of self-awareness and insight into what you're doing goes a long way. And I think I really applied that in many of my interactions, not just at the dinner table, but respecting those around me and kind of reading the room and getting a bead on how to approach a situation, particularly if it's a difficult situation.
Awesome. What's your favorite place to waste a few hours?
Ooh, great question. Well, I am a big fan of the Natural History Museum. And here in Los Angeles, they have an exhibit right now. It's Tattoos Through the Ages. And it is beautiful and fascinating. And I just spent like 3 hours there just walking around and They have these weird prosthetic arms that they made where they recreated famous tattoos, and it's weird and creepy and really cool.
Did you have a favorite tattoo that you saw?
Well, you know, the Sailor Jerry ones were really interesting because they kind of are the iconic Americana tattoos. Although the ones I thought that I liked the best were actually ones that monks did, where they took ashes of thought leaders and you know, sort of religious leaders, and tattooed their ashes onto their body to imbue themselves with their strength. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool, if maybe a little unsanitary.
Do you have any tattoos?
I do. I have three. I have one that has my husband's initials. I have a dragon that I got when I was 17. And I have the symbol from Earth from the show Stargate that I got with my two sisters after my mom passed. Stargate was her favorite show and, you know, was really important to her. And so we all got the symbol for Earth on our arms.
That's beautiful. And was the dragon the 17-year-old tattoo catches me, because I think everybody has their first crappy tattoo that they thought was going to be amazing. Why the dragon when you were 17?
Oh, God. When people ask me, I always say, well, I was 17 and I wanted a tattoo. And I literally walked into that tattoo shop and looked at their flash tats and picked the most cliche, ugly dragon. And I mean, I love it because it's so representative of me at the time. But it is really a pretty horrible tattoo.
I have an abstract Sacred Heart on my upper arm that is that exact tattoo for me. Like, it was, yeah. I love it. I love this memory. I will probably get it covered up at some point in time, but with something it's there at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
So what are you listening to or reading right now?
Ooh, I just finished Dear Madam President by Jennifer Palmieri. You'll notice I read and listen to a lot of politically oriented media. So I just finished Dear Madam President, which Jennifer Palmieri was the communications director on Hillary Clinton's campaign. And it's basically her take on what happened over that campaign, what surprised her, what didn't. But what's so hopeful about it is that she frames the whole book as an open letter to the first woman elected to office. And that's so hopeful to me because she just assumes we're going to get there. She just assumes that it's going to happen. And, you know, she's imparting her wisdom on this woman who is now holding the highest office in the land. And it was very moving. It was very personal. She talked a lot about being vulnerable and allowing yourself to have a more emotional reaction, and how women are taught from a very young age to cover that up, especially if they want to be in positions of power. And she talked about how dismantling that will actually lead to the first woman president.
That's so interesting. So tell me, what's a time that you knew you were loved?
Ooh, that's a great question. When I started dating my husband in college, we met when we were literal fetuses. He was 18 and I was 19. And for our second Valentine's Day, I've always had pretty high anxiety when it comes, this is really random, but I have high anxiety when it comes to like notebooks and sketchbooks. I feel like if they're new and beautiful and I start to use them, that I've somehow destroyed them. I've since worked through a lot of that in therapy. But at the time, I was 20. I was dealing with this high emotional anxiety. And for Valentine's Day, my now husband bought me this beautiful sketchbook and this expensive set of markers. And I was, you know, I was like, thank you so much. But I knew I was going to have a problem with actually using it. And I open it to the first page, and he had scribbled on it. And I opened it to the second page and he had like doodled all over it. And I opened it to the third page and there was a note that said, here, I already ruined it for you, so you can just go ahead and get started. And it was that moment where he understood me in such like a tender and intimate way. And instead of making me feel bad about it or making me, you know, teasing me for it, he took that knowledge and gave me something that showed remarkable wisdom for a 19-year-old college boy. So I think that was a time I felt very loved.
That's amazing. So now let's talk about the thing that you mentioned right before the podcast that I am super interested about. So you're apparently both people who like to roll dice and pretend to be other people. times. So yes. tell me about your regular D&D session. What are you guys playing and who are you playing as?
Yes, we have a weekly D&D game. I play as a tiefling warlock, which is like a half demon. And then with that character, I wanted to make it even darker. So I went with the warlock, and my patron is this lord of the bats, because I love bats. I'm obsessed with bats. And it's really fun. We're doing this campaign where we're trying to save the younger sister of one of our characters, and we get captured in basically pirate's nest, and it's really fun. And I love, you know, especially with how serious everything is in the world right now, it's kind of fun to escape into another world where you're also dealing with serious problems, but it's all
is this
your
first role-playing session, or have you played before?
I have played before. This is my first regular one that I've actually been able to keep up with. And we aim for weekly, and we, you know, usually get twice a month, and it's been really fun. It's been really great to see the same people and to, you know, create the sense of community, which I think is another thing people really love about role-playing games, is especially if you do it regularly, you really create this tight circle of people who understand.
If you were a Dungeons and Dragons character class and race, what would you be?
Ooh, well, I think that I would be a paladin of some kind. And I think I would want to be like a half orc, which doesn't really fit with paladin, but I feel like I have that sort of imposing physicality of a half orc. And then a paladin, of course, especially in my work, I mean, a lot of what I do is about protecting and defending what I believe is right.
That's awesome. So I want to use that as a way to kind of just jump to the core question that we talk about here on The Threshold. And let's say that on the mean streets of LA, somebody came up and asked you, hey, in a few minutes, can you tell me what you believe about life and faith? How would you respond to that question?
Yeah, I believe that we are all connected as people. I believe that people are inherently good, and I believe in good people doing good things. And, you know, I think I always think about the famous Mr. Rogers quote where children are having anxiety about bad things happening in the news. And he says, look for the helpers, look for the people that come in when something terrible happens and are working to help clean up or help make right this terrible situation. And I think what I believe is that if we all took some time to consider the other person's standpoint or where they're coming from and what's happening in their life, we would all see that we're not so different and that we can connect in a way that makes it easier for us to be kind. I say to my son all the time, it's nice to be kind and it costs you nothing. And I think that's really what I believe in. And I believe that when you put out that positive force into the universe or the ether or God or whatever you want to call it, that positivity comes back to you. It might take a while. It might not be the way you want it to come back, but it will come back.
Now, are you a religious practitioner of any kind, or do you subscribe to a certain label as far as any sort of religiosity goes?
Not really. I dabbled in Unitarianism after my son was born. I think when things like births or deaths happen, I think everyone gets a sort of interest in what is the larger meaning of life and what is, where are we and why are we here and how are we connected? And I did that for a little while, and I actually liked it quite a bit. I don't ascribe myself to any one religion, though I do feel, like I said, this connection. And whether you call it, both of my parents are alcoholics. I spent a lot of time in Al-Anon, and their 12-step program, which is based on the AA program, which is, you know, based in this faith in a higher power that some people call God, some people call other things. And so I think that's more what I ascribe to, is I have a higher power. I wouldn't necessarily ascribe it to any one religion or even name, but I definitely have one.
So you mentioned your you know parents' alcoholism and how that kind of created this ethos of understanding a higher power. Did either of your parents, were they religious at all, or did they kind of have a secular perspective also?
No, they were, if anything, they were anti-religion and very critical of religion in my household growing up. My mom grew up as a pretty strict Catholic, and my dad grew up as in a very strict Lutheran household. And I think that informed their life choices and that they had very negative experiences with religion in their own childhoods. And in not wanting to transfer that to their children, they actually made religion somewhat of an enemy in the household.
So when you were growing up, that would have been something that was kind of an emerging norm, but still probably would not have been the normal case. Were you ever aware of that as a kid, that you had a different home life as far as that went than other kids did?
Yeah, I think I knew we didn't go to religious services of any kind. I had a lot of friends that did go to church or to temple, and I think I understood that we were different in that we weren't just sort of neutral on the subject, but we were actually, my parents at least, were actively anti-religion, and I feel like that sort of contrapositive position felt different than just, because I also had friends who didn't go to religious services, but it didn't feel the same way that it felt growing up in my house.
You mentioned a lot of experiences of kind of connectedness. Like, that's a high value for you, that understanding that there is this, whatever it might be, this kind of greater reality that connects us all, right? Has there been a moment, maybe as you look back in your life, where that awareness kind of came to be? Like, do you remember a time where you first kind of became aware of the sense of things being more connected than just we could visually see?
Yeah. So like we said, or like I just said, my parents are alcoholics. My mom was an alcoholic. She died of the disease. Mm. In December. So what that led to in my case, and this isn't the case for everyone, but I was very close to my three siblings. My baby brother, as I call him, he's not really a baby anymore, but he's 10 years younger than I am. And my baby sister is 8 years younger than I am. And then my sister is 2 years younger than I am. And so there's a pretty big age spread there. But what I found growing up was that we had this shared experience of trying to deal with parents who maybe had the best intentions, but couldn't take care of us in the way that I think a lot of kids want and maybe need to be taken care of. And so we took care of each other. That was the first moment that I felt so connected. It wasn't just about me. It was about me and my siblings and how we could help each other, how we could use each other and complement each other to get through a very difficult time. And, you know, to this day, I always say that my sister that's 2 years younger than I am, I always call her my soulmate, because I feel like we are, you know, we're sisters, but it feels like more than that a lot of the time. And I think that coming out of that experience really created an awareness that I'm not alone here on this planet.
Now, a lot of the work you do, you mentioned, you know, being a paladin, this greater sense of connectedness, and how that's motivated kind of your current role. You're the producer of this podcast. I crammed a bunch of episodes before we talked. And it's really funny. Like, I always tell people who, like, my relationship with politics is very similar to a lot of people's relationships with religion. I am very apolitical, which I do believe makes me kind of a horrible person, right? Because it's a privileged American concept to be apolitical. Now I have my reasons and justification. I think it's an important thing, and I'm very comfortable with the fact that there are other people who are politically active, which allows me to be in this position of privilege, right? So I am very thankful, actually, that those types of conversations happen. But how did kind of maybe this sense of deeper connectedness, this desire for good and for people to see the good, how did that kind of lead you to where you are now?
Well, I think I mean, like you, for a lot of my life, I wouldn't say I was apolitical, but I was political in the way that privileged white women get to be political, in that I cared insofar as it affected me. And I, you know, I consider myself a Democrat. I worked on Hillary's first campaign in 2008 when I was in college. I, you know, read the news. I considered myself, you know, to be political. But when, as we got closer to the 2016 election, and as I started to become more and more aware of the just the nastiness that, and I'm not talking about partisanship, because I feel like a lot of people now, they talk about politics and how nasty it's gotten in terms of partisanship. But I mean, the absolute disregard that people use politics to justify, I think in a similar way that some people use religion to justify. I think politics and religion are very similar, and I think they're very connected in that you have your beliefs, it's very hard to change them, and you can use it for all sorts of good and all sorts of bad. And so I think when I started to realize that I interacted with politics in the way only a privileged white woman can, and I started to see that, again, it's not just about me. It's not just about me walking this earth by myself. And it's not just even about me walking this earth with my siblings and my community, but it's about a larger human community. And after I had my son, who will be four next month, that became even deeper for me. Because as cliche as it is, and I hate cliches, although I use them all the time, you know, having a child, I realized that this is how all mothers feel. Not all mothers. That is not a good generalization to make. But this sort of love and connection you have to your child, this isn't unique to me. This isn't something I discovered. And so for me to stand by while other people's children were being hurt or killed or going hungry was absolutely not an option anymore. And it's embarrassing to say that it took me having my own kid and getting into that life to do that. But that was definitely a moment that, coupled with the sort of turn in political rhetoric in 2015 leading up to the 2016 election, really woke me up and made me expand my definition of human connectedness.
Now, I know that's led into your podcast has an understanding that it's a kind of a feminist political podcast. And I think that's a word that can mean so many things to so many people. So if you had to describe kind of what it means to be a feminist, how would you describe that?
That's a great question. So we say feminist, and then the next word out of our mouths is usually intersectional. Because being a feminist, despite the root of the word, I think is more about creating a more egalitarian or equal society. And then people say, why isn't it called equalism? And it's like, well, because we are fighting against a system that is in place, this patriarchy, and to call it equalism is, I think, a little disingenuous in terms of the goals. But I think feminism at its core is an understanding that the system in which we live, not just politically, but societally, is inherently flawed, and that it privileges certain groups of people, and there's a hierarchy there. And my definition of feminism, especially as it relates to intersectionality, is to start to look at that privilege, be very honest about it, and start dismantling some of these more insidious and dangerous institutions.
And I know that, what are some of the things that play into intersectional feminism? Because I'll be honest, the last part of this conversation I had with Destiny from New Wave Feminist, I actually, she used the term intersectional feminism, and I just went, yes. And then afterwards I Googled like intersectional feminism, because I am a white male who enjoys all the privileges of being a white male. And so even my understanding of what exactly that meant, like I had heard the term before, right. I'd never been accountable for knowing what it meant. Could you tell people a little bit more about some of the groups that intersectional feminism really plays into? Because I think that's a really important part of the conversation.
Yeah. So the way I like to explain it is the word itself, intersectionalism, has that the word, the definition right in it, to intersect. So when you have an identity, it intersects on many axes. So, you know, for you, you are white and you are also a man, and you're also a father, I believe. Yep. And so those are all things that intersect, and the cross section of where they all intersect is who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about intersectional feminism, you talk about all of the things that shape your identity and who you are as a person. So you can be a woman, you can be black, so black woman, you can be queer, you can be transgendered, you can be, you know, a mother, you can be, you know, all of these different things that create and shape who you are. And when you talk about intersectional feminism, it's about looking at those intersections holistically and saying that feminism is not just about equal pay for white women. Actually, today is a really good day. We're talking about this. It's Equal Pay Day. And the idea that women don't make as much as men for similar work. But if you look at that intersectionally, okay, so white women make about 80 cents to the dollar on what white men make, but black women make about 69 cents and Latino women make about 62 cents. And that's looking at it intersectionally, where examining my own privilege as a white woman and saying, okay, obviously there is work to do for white women, but there's also work to do for these other groups, and making sure that those other groups are part of the conversation and part of your consideration is, I believe, at the crux of intersectional feminism.
Now, and like this is something that I think is such a huge deal. I think there's so much of this. And one of the things I love about it, and when I started looking into it, is this understanding that we're not just one thing. Right. Like there are even some different hierarchies to the way that we might identify ourselves. And that's person to person, right? Not everybody's hierarchy, how they identify right. themselves is going to be the same. And it's hard to apply your own sense of priority to other people's, but acknowledging those different things, there's a huge amount of self-awareness in that, that I really loved as I dived into it. And I loved hearing you kind of, explain that in your own words too, because I think it's so important not to just read a definition on like Wikipedia, right? Or Urban Dictionary, because right. I did look at the definitions there and they were interesting to say the least. The reality is hearing it in somebody's word, hearing your story and your experience of that is so much more meaningful to me, than that. One of the things that I want to, know is, so for me, as a white man, what's the most important thing that I can actually do to live in a feminist mindset, which is, I always think, one of the stupidest questions a guy can ask of a feminist. But I think it's also slightly better than just being like, I'm a feminist, like, and just pretending like I know what I'm doing right. too. So what's the one thing that you think that, or the one piece of advice you would give men on how to be more engaged in understanding what it means to be a feminist male?
That is actually not a stupid question. It is a great question. And I, you know, I always say the best thing you can do is shut your mouth and open your ears. And when someone is telling you that what you're doing is harmful in some way, believe them. And so if, you know, there's also this whole idea that it's not on women and people of color and queer people to educate everyone else. You can do your own research. That's fine. But there is also, you know, a lot of people just want to be asked what they need, what they feel are the deficiencies in their lives, how they feel other people's privilege affects them. And before making some blanket statement, asking and saying, what does this sound like? What do you hear when I say this? Here, you know, regardless of the intent of my words, what is the effect of my words? And I think that is such an important piece that's pretty basic that I feel like a lot of people miss completely. And then when someone comes to you and takes the time to say, oh, you know, that joke you made, that was really racist and it sucked and don't do that. Instead of trying to defend yourself, say, I am so sorry. I will not do that again. Thank you for taking the time to educate me. And I feel like there is such a knee-jerk need to defend yourself, which I totally understand, especially when I'm fighting with my husband, I get very defensive very quickly. But if you can manage to train that out of yourself and to approach good faith criticism with a little bit of humility, that right there is a great first step to being a feminist and an ally to people that don't enjoy the privileges that you may have, no matter what privilege that is, you know, whatever privilege you are willing to acknowledge.
It's really interesting. I would love to talk with you a little bit about kind of the cross section of the things that you and I enjoy talking about. And I would love to hear just your perspective on what you think about the common interaction between religion and politics in today's world. Specifically in today's American political scene.
Right. Well, it's really interesting because I am also reading, I didn't mention at the top of the show, but I'm also reading a book about the Christian legal movement and sort of the religious right in politics. And I said it before, I feel like religion and politics are way more similar than people maybe want to admit, because it basically comes down to a held set of beliefs and then how you execute on those beliefs. And I think that there is a definite interplay between your religious beliefs and your political beliefs. And it's not necessarily that, oh, if you're a Christian, you're a Republican, or you're to the right of center, or if you're liberal, you have no religion, or you don't care about religion. It's obviously a lot more complicated than that. And that goes back to this intersectional thinking that it's never as simple as this is what you are and this is what that means, is that it does differ from person to person. And the way that you combine the two is a lot more important than the labels you give yourself or that other people give you. And so I think that I think that no religion has cornered the market on morality. I don't think you need to be one specific religion to be a moral person. And I believe that morality is essential in politics. And you can define morality in lots of different ways, but no matter what your beliefs are politically, if you can justify it morally within yourself, if you can wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and be okay with yourself, that is what's going to inform your political beliefs. And so that's related to religion, but not the same as religion, if that makes sense.
No, I love that. Now, let me, this is something that for me is one of the few things that kind of like triggers me politically when I hear a candidate say this. I'd love to hear your thoughts. When somebody is running with a religious background, right? And this specifically happens to Catholics, which I happen to be. Anytime they're running for office, there's this kind of common line where they say, well, but my religion won't influence the way that I like the way that I govern or the way that I lead or the way that I.
Right.
How do you feel about that statement? Because for me, it's a very hard statement to hear.
Oh, I think first of all, that's just a load of horse poo poo when people say that, because it's just wrong. Everything in your life, and pretty much especially religion, is going to influence the way you approach politics in your life, and I think that in this country, the framers of the Constitution set up very intentionally a system where, with the separation of church and state. And that doesn't mean you can't be religious. That doesn't mean you can't use your religious beliefs to inform politically what you're doing. And I think that to deny that is A, intellectually dishonest, and B, short-sighted thinking, because you have to rely on whatever the well of your morality and your beliefs are in order to create and shape legislation and policy that you think is the best solution for this country. And to deny that you use that resource within yourself it doesn't make any sense to me. And also you can absolutely hold one belief personally and in your own life and not use it politically. That doesn't mean it's not there. That doesn't mean it doesn't influence your decisions. A really good example, I think, is Tim Kaine, Senator Tim Kaine, who is Hillary Clinton's running mate. He personally does not believe in abortions. And he's very, you know, he's a religious guy and he's very forthright about that. But he also says that it is not his place to legislate that for women. So you can believe whatever you want to in your day-to-day life. And as long as you are using that to inform your decisions and not to make your decisions, I mean, I think that's the best possible situation.
Hmm. Interesting. No, I like that. You hit a lot of the things that really bug me about that statement. And I loved hearing that from you. Not only because it affirmed my worldview, I loved the way you articulated it also too. I want to ask you a couple questions kind of specifically about your perception of things. So like I mentioned, I am Catholic. How do you perceive the Catholic Church or Christians in general in the context of your world? Like, how do they impact you in your work and in your day-to-day life? What's your general impression of them? I know that's a big kind of loaded question.
Well, it's interesting because, like I said, I grew up in a very anti-religious household. And so I would say that when I was younger, it was a very negative view. And if someone told me that they were Christian or Catholic, particularly if they were devout or dedicated to that, I definitely took a very negative view of them, which is interesting because, like I said, my mom grew up Catholic. My grandmother was extremely Catholic. My grandmother's sister is a nun. And so for me to whom I love, Sister Eileen, and so for me to take such a negative view of that is really kind of silly, or at the very least, young and naive. And I think now I have a lot of respect for people that have a defined set of beliefs. And I have a lot of respect for people that get up and go to church every Sunday morning. And even if you don't, if you go sometimes, I have a lot of respect for the things that you do for yourself that feeds your soul. And I think self-care is so important, especially in, at least in my line of work, where it's just a constant barrage of very depressing news, that anything that takes care of you and feeds your soul and gets you ready to go back out there and fight whatever fight you're fighting is as absolutely a good thing. I think that there is a perception, especially in politics, and I am absolutely subject to this, that you hear terms like the Christian right or the evangelical right and the sort of hypocrisy there. And it's very difficult to not generalize that to all people who identify as Christians or Catholics or evangelicals, which is just completely unfair. I don't want people generalizing things about me because I'm a woman or because I'm liberal or because I voted for Hillary Clinton. So it's something that, again, I have to reckon with, and I have to identify within myself that I know plenty of religious people, and I know, you know, my husband and my husband's family are Jewish, and his uncle is a cantor, and I have friends who are rabbis, one of my best friends is very devout Christian, and it took a long time for me to divest that from the stereotypes that I have A, grown up with, and B, still perpetuate within myself, especially because of what I do. And that's something that I've been actually grappling with a lot, which is why I was so excited when you reached out about doing this podcast, because it is something in me that I have been working to evolve.
Oh, it does. I love that. Now, let me ask a little bit more of a specific question, because I think, you know, a lot of people want to talk about Christianity in the abstract, but I'm always really curious for people, especially people who, like yourself, have a sense of a spiritual awareness, even if they don't prescribe to a certain belief mm-hmm. system. How do you feel about the person of Jesus? Who do you think he was?
So it's interesting. I actually think that Jesus was a real person. I think that he was probably a very, you know, loving and charismatic person. I think that, I personally believe he was probably not the Son of God, though who am I to know anything? So, but I think that, you know, and then these stories, that's the Bible, whether you believe their stories or fact or, you know, it doesn't matter. But again, I think it was a way to introduce this concept of love and forgiveness into the general lexicon. And whether you believe Jesus was a real person or the Son of God or anything, I think that he is a beautiful symbol of love and forgiveness. And, you know, even though that's not part of my personal belief system, I actually do think that he is a very important figure in historical and biblical context.
That inserting love and forgiveness into the lexicon. I love that. I love that phrase, especially for somebody who has a sense of like this concept of connectedness. I think that's such a beautiful idea. I always kind of offer people two things at the end of the show. And that's if you have a question for me about anything we've talked about or anything else, I'd love to answer it for you. But it's, if not, that's totally okay.
No, I do have a question, and sort of related to the question you just asked me. So, you know, you are Catholic and you believe in Jesus Christ. I've listened to some of your episodes before. And so what is your perception of Jesus? How do you think that he as a figure factors into your life, your community, and bonus rounds if you want to connect it back to politics?
No, totally. That's great. So the simple answer, you know, the trite answer is like, oh, Jesus is my Lord and Savior, which is true. But for me, like the most important thing is understanding that if Jesus is the second person of the Trinity, if Jesus is God and lives in perfect communion with two other people, which in and of itself is a miracle and only possible through divine power, that'd be God the Father and the Holy Spirit. I believe that he exists outside of time. And that he ultimately is an active force of love made manifest. And I believe that that love is instilled into all of us from before creation and calls us to something greater than ourselves. And I believe that love was made manifest in a human being at one point in history, in the person of Jesus. So I believe that God the Son existed before the incarnation temporarily, and was incarnate as Jesus, and that Jesus was fully God and fully man. And I believe that he sent his Holy Spirit to continue to empower us to live that love and forgiveness in a completely new and different way than we had before, because he healed some of the deep woundedness of mankind. And not that it's entirely gone, but that it's in the process of being restored. So I believe everything post-Jesus is about this act of love, this power of love, this person of love, trying to restore the world to the way that it's supposed to be. For me personally, I have to be most and primarily concerned with what that looks like in my life and my relationship with him. Secondarily, what it looks like in my relationship, mostly with my wife and kids, but also with everyone else and all of humanity. And after that, how I invite other people to encounter and experience that love in a way that helps transform them to share that love with other people. So that's the trite and a little bit more extended answer. But it is a deeply personal thing, but for me, it's not a private thing. And, I'll be honest, like my relationship with Jesus right now, is pretty shitty. Like it's, like this last few weeks,
I love that.
I've been in a really just dead space. Seriously, lots of amazing things are happening. But I have like a tooth abscess right now. I've got $12,000 worth of dental bills coming. I don't know how I'm going to handle that. My car's dying. Like there's all these other things. There's joy in the middle of that. But a lot of it, like, and this is not a sense of superstition. But I'm very spiritually drained right now. And I don't think those things are happening because I'm spiritually drained and not being faithful right now. For me, I would think about that as I'm not receiving the type of love that I'm supposed to be right now. And because of that, there's a sense of lack in my life. And it's not about those things happening because I'm not being loved enough. It's not about any sort of cause and effect. It is specifically right now, I'm having a hard time receiving that love because I'm in a hard place right now. And that's a very real thing. And at some point, like God will break through that. I firmly believe. And I'll find myself in a place of receiving that love properly. Usually when I dispose myself to it better, like if I actually spend time in prayer, talking to him and not just like magically wishing he would make everything better. That's usually when things get better. how it connects to politics. You know, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, it's so interesting because I have actually very similar beliefs, although I call it something slightly different. I call it, you know, this idea of self-care, or like I said earlier, putting positivity out to get positivity back. And when you're drained and when you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not praying, if you're not doing the things that you know fill that well, you're not going to get that back. And so I just love that we actually agree on that.
Yeah, no, totally. That, I mean, those things are very, very common things that I think, you know, for me, I mean, everybody would approach it differently. I would say that's a deep truth that God is rooted in the human heart, right? Other people, like, right. That's how people are wired, right? But for me, like, I think there's a bigger reason why that's something we experience. And whether somebody does or not, it's great that we can all look at it and be like, but that's true. Like, that's a truth.
Right.
It's a real thing. And one of the things I loved about your episode with Will Wheaton and Felicia Day, who, like, I was just super jealous that you got to hang out with Will Wheaton and Felicia Day, but what
I was kind of jealous of myself. Oh, I'm not gonna lie, that's even possible.
And so I was Will's statements about truth, right? And he's talking about scientific
right.
truth, but I know that there are these greater human, philosophical, or even theological truths that we can look at and say, that's a real thing. Like, we know that's a right. thing that people experience. We know that's a true thing. And so that's one of the things I love about this created world that we live in, or this world that we live in, period, you know?
Right.
And so how it connects to politics, you know, that's a great question. I always tell people I am sinfully apolitical. Like, I want to acknowledge, like, I know right. that about myself. For me, it's hard because I just, at the end of the day, and this is probably a sign of a lack of hope in this area, which is probably why it's sinful. I just don't see politics as the end result answer to what I view are core human issues. But I also don't have a better solution. My big thing is I'm way more of a, I do pray about it. Like, I'm in prayer on this, but I also let's roll up our sleeves and let's help people. Like, right. political advocacy is great when accompanied by direct action with people. So there's two Catholic concepts that are, subsidiary and solidarity, right? So solidarity is right. this understanding that we're all connected and there's this bigger picture, and that if one human is suffering, we all are having the image of God marred by that, and we should work to the resolution. The other one is subsidiary, is the people closest to the issue should work on the issue, right? Which I think
right.
is very true politically, but they typically kind of get skewed left or right for unimportant reasons, because I do think understanding we are all connected and that people closest to the issue should be working on it most fervently, but people further away should also support them in that. I think that should
transcend
right. what side of the aisle somebody's on. But I specifically think that Christians really suck at that as much as secular people do, because we'd much rather, it's much more convenient to go serve on a mission trip in Africa or South America, or, you know, even an hour away, because then I don't have to look at that homeless person that I now know right. the name of and that I've had a meal with as I drive by them under the overpass day in and day out. I don't have to be in a relationship with that person. So for right. me, it lets me know, like, hey, yeah, you are a little sinfully apolitical. And that's not to say I've never been politically active or have voted or anything like that. I'll be very clear. I did vote in the last election because, to a certain degree, for me, it was saying, like, I don't like any of the options I've been presented for the last few. That's not true. I don't like any of the options I was presented this time around. And to stay silent mm-hmm. is to actually say, I'm okay with this, and I'm not, right?
Right.
So that did right. force me to actually vote in a national election for the first time, because I had to say this is
wow.
enough for me to do. Locally, like, civically, like, I will get involved. Yeah. But my favorite way to get involved is by the act of actually engaging another person in front of me. I actually manage all of our outreach ministries at the church I work at. They're huge into advocacy, and I love that. I love that. I love that, because it's so much not a part of who I am. And so for me, I get to really push them on the, like, I love that you guys want to advocate for all these things, but how are we actually living this? Like, how are we actually right. engaged right here? And so I think
right.
as long as your belief politically and your actions in reality are aligned with each other, then that is how your faith and your belief should impact what you're doing. It shouldn't just be an abstract ideal that you're advocating for. It should be actually a way you're living authentically and truly. And so even if you're not religious, I think that should be the case. I think if you're advocating for
yeah.
something
yeah.
you know, you should go out and engage with people who are directly addressed by that issue so that it's not just you saying, oh, like, here's what I think. Right. And so,
yeah, yeah,
oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So the other thing that I offer, and if the answer is no, that's totally okay, is that I love to offer people prayer at the end of this, and nobody's under an obligation to take it if you don't want to.
I would love that.
Is there anything specific you would want prayer for?
Actually, yes. I would like to send a prayer to my mother, whom I've talked about a couple times, who just recently passed, and I've been thinking about her a lot. And she just recently visited me and all of my siblings in dreams. Mm-hmm. So if we could send a prayer to her, that would be lovely. Okay.
And what's your mom's name?
Beth.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit. God, I just ask that you would create and root enough a deep sense of how the person next to us on the street, in the coffee shop, at work, on the bus, in our homes, is somebody who you've called us into a relationship with, that you desire us to experience deep connection with. And that in these moments of experience of connection and these relationships that we have, you seek to ground us more perfectly in the goodness that you offer us. That you as a lover, as somebody who cares for us, as somebody who introduced us most perfectly to the idea of forgiveness, that you would watch over us and hold us close to you. And we know, God, that for Christians, we believe in a life after this one. And so we just ask that that Beth, wherever she is at, would be drawn into a deeper relationship with you, that she would be drawn into an understanding of your love, that you would send comfort and goodness down upon her family, on her children, and on those who were loved by her and who loved and cared for her as well. We thank you for Devon. We thank you for the strong voice that she is, both as a woman, but also as a voice in politics. Regardless of whether people agree with her or disagree with her, I hope that they would be able to listen deeply to what she's trying to share and to respond to that with charity in the way that they feel best called to. Watch over us all and help us to see each other clearly. Ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. And can I add one thing too?
Yeah, totally.
I would also like God and Jesus Christ, the Lord Savior, to keep a special eye on the victims of the chemical weapons attack in Syria that occurred on Saturday. And it is still a little bit unclear as to what exactly happened, but it looks like the leader of Syria, Assad, perpetrated a chemical weapons attack on his own people and hurt many innocent women, children, and men. And I hope that we can keep an eye on them.
Right. Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I love this. I loved this conversation. And I love, like, people always ask me who my audience is, and I'm like, it's the person I'm talking to right then.
Right.
Like, I have such a confused audience that skewed to totally different ends of every spectrum that it's, you know, challenging. But like this certainly was one of my favorite conversations that I have had. It's been a huge honor. So if people want to hear more from you, tell them about where they can find you on the internet.
Yes. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Devon Handy, and you can follow the podcast at Hellbent Pod. And then we are Hellbent Podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We put out episodes twice a week, so Mondays and Thursdays, which is a pretty ridiculous editorial schedule if you ask me, but you know, I do it anyway. I also very much enjoyed this conversation, Tony. Seriously, I was so excited about it, and it was everything I had hoped it would be.
All right, we'll be back right after this with my conversation with Claire Swinarski. Hey, everybody. I don't normally do this, but I wanted to take a second today to talk about the name of this episode. Don't Split the Party, A Feminist Tale. You may or may not be familiar with that phrase. At its core, though, it's a term that comes from role-playing games, something that Dev and I talk a little bit about our mutual love of early in the show. But continually throughout the episode, there was this idea of connectedness, of unity, and some other things that came forward continually in Devin's story, in her conversation, and in her exploration of life and faith. Not splitting the party basically means that when you have a bunch of characters in a game, if you move them all to different locations, if they're all separate from each other, it starts to get a lot more complicated, and the likelihood that any of those characters may die, may not thrive, are going to struggle, that they can't come together to meet the common goals or obstacles that they're presented with, is a pretty common thing. And so it seemed like a really fitting name for this episode. There are a lot of other things that came to mind, but it's the one that I think in her expression of connectedness really kind of captured something that I think is core to who Devin is. It's also just great political wordplay, but beyond politics, I do think Don't Split the Party is also a lot about people and making sure that you have the gifts in the community you need to thrive. So I really want to thank Devin for that and wanted to share a little bit with you guys about why I named this episode what I named it. Speaking of which, I don't know if you're a role-playing fan or not. Something that we normally talk about during our ad break is how Catholic Bomb Co. supports us, which it totally does, and you should totally go check it out and use the discount code KNOCKKNOCK if you're going to do that. But we actually have a couple other projects that I want to share with you. One is called Beards and Beyond. It's a beard-based role-playing game that I developed a little while ago as part of a new project we're working on called Plus One. You can get that at plusonegames.com/beards or use the link down in the show note. It's a great little 4-page role-playing system that's all the player information plus the information you need to run the game. If you're a nerd like me or just want to check it out and support us, we'd really love that. You can also check out plusonebalms.com if you love what we've done over at Catholic Balm Co. But you are a nerdy gamer geek, or maybe you're not Catholic and you just don't want to buy stuff from a Catholic company. I don't know. Check it out. plusonebalms.com. They're a bunch of statistic-based, like Dungeons & Dragons stats-based beard balms. So they are not actually alchemical. You will not get stronger, faster, whatever for using them, but you'll certainly feel like you will, and your beard will be healthy, beautiful, and it'll smell amazing also too. So please check those things out. Lastly, this week we do have a clip for our Patreon supporters from Devin that's going to go up a little bit later, talking about some of her perspectives on how we listen in the space of our political conversations. And so I'm really excited about that. I was so thrilled to have Devin on. I'll be honest, it was a massively joy-filled experience for me. I don't think I've ever had a guest be more excited before this interview about being on the show. And it was such a tremendous honor to have her here and to have Claire with us for these couple of episodes also too. So here we go with my follow-up conversation about it, what we took away from the conversation with Devin, with Claire Swinarski of Catholic Feminist Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I always tell people, like, I try to not have favorites about guests or conversations or anything else like that. And the reality is, even when we say that, we do have favorites. And I always try to just be present to the person I'm having the conversation with. I don't worry about, you know, what our listener is going to think or anything else like that while I'm having the conversation, because I just want to receive that person deeply. But I'll be honest, like, I loved the conversation I was able to have with Devin. We actually sat around and stayed on for about 45 minutes after we were done, just chatting about life and our weird fandoms and other things we love doing and all the different things about how our life connected in the interview. So there was so much in this conversation that I really loved. But I would love to just start with you, Claire. What are some of the things that stood out to you or connected to with you from this conversation?
When I got Devin's name and I knew that that's what we were going to be talking about, I hadn't heard of her or her podcast. So I was Googling her a little bit and I saw on her Twitter that one of her heroes, she says, is Cecile Richards, the former CEO of Planned Parenthood. And I totally had to stop myself from doing what I always tell other people not to do. Like, I instantly came to the table with this judgment that I had to shake off. But I was like, if one of your heroes is Cecile Richards, and now you're talking about Hillary Clinton, like, I had all these thoughts that I just had to get around and get out of my own box. So it was really kind of an interesting exercise for me, because I feel like I'm constantly telling people not to do that. And then I was doing it. So I came to the table with a preconceived notion that I tried to not get in the way of what I was hearing. And she did say some things that I really loved. Again, kind of similar to Destiny, I loved what she had to say about intersectional feminism and the importance of that, the importance of including all women and their stories. And I also liked how she wasn't afraid to say that religion obviously influences the way you govern. Like, I loved how you guys were talking about when people say that their Catholicism isn't going to influence the way that they govern. It's like, then are you really Catholic? Because yes, it is. It absolutely is. Like, don't play that game just to get votes.
It only makes me feel like you're lying about something. And so whether that is what you propose to believe, or whether it is what you're going to do after you're in office, or whatever, it only makes me feel like you're lying to me. You know, and I like I said, I came clean on the, I'm very apolitical. Like, and I think you kind of mentioned, like, that you're kind of burnt out on politics a lot, but.
So burnt out, yeah.
It's hard. Like, it is hard to think about those. And I do love that for somebody who has a very different life experience, very different perspective than I, that we were at such a similar place around that. Like, what she expressed is exactly how I feel about that line. When people say that, I'm just like, oh, it doesn't even make sense.
Like, absolutely. But it's kind of funny how we can agree on that. But then I have to say, when she was talking about how Tim Kaine is kind of the dream scenario, I actually think Tim Kaine is the opposite. Like, I feel like when people say then what she said, he said, I actually think that that's like the worst. When people say like, oh, well, I'm personally against this, you know, like, take abortion. I'm personally against abortion, but I wouldn't want to tell someone else what to do. That really connected with our conversation with Destiny too, where it's like, we can't take that and put it on any other human rights issue. We would never think that was okay. Yeah. If someone stood up and was like, look, I'm not a Nazi, but if you want to kill a bunch of Jewish people, you go for it. Like, no judgment. To me, that's so Slim Shady. And it's like, I would rather have someone stand up and say that they don't think abortion's wrong than say it's wrong, but, you know, like, I'm too afraid of not getting votes to say that. Like, that's kind of how that feels to me. And it reminds me of this moment, during the, I don't even want to admit I watched these, but the stupid Republican debates, like, oh, the hours of my life I wish I could have back. But they were asked about abortion, and Chris Christie and Jeb Bush and all these people were like, you know, I'm against abortion, but like, it gets kind of fishy in these circumstances and this circumstance. And then Marco Rubio, who I have a lot of beef with, I'm definitely not standing here being like, I love Marco Rubio, but he said at one point, like, look, I'd rather lose than stand up here and lie to you about the abortion issue. No, it's wrong. It's wrong all the time. I'm not going to go in and say it's right. And I want people to just be honest, yeah. I guess. I don't want politicians beating around the bush to get my vote. It's just such a gross thing to do, I think.
Ultimately, that's the question about, like, Tim Kaine or any other politician is whether or not I like the way you're saying it, whether or not I think that's the worst case scenario, the best case scenario. Do I actually feel like you're being honest with me? Like, that's, I think that's,
yeah,
at its core, that's my concern. And that's my critique is, like, I do care, but my big thing is, are you actually being truthful with me about whatever it is you believe in, and how that's going to inform and influence and all of your behaviors and actions with any of that? And I think that for me is, at the end of the day, what I want. And so, you know, whether it's somebody who's going to be very direct about that, or, and whether I agree with it or not, yeah, I 100% think that that is something that we're all really looking for. I one of the things that stood out to me was kind of the whole conversation about intersectional feminism and the identity is an intersection basically of demographics, right? Of all the smaller identities we have. And I mean, like, that for me, that was such a clear thing, because I think there's so many conversations in today where it's hard to understand why somebody else prioritizes a part of their identity over another part, right? Like, why, even take you for example, right? So, like, you have a podcast called the Catholic Feminist Podcast, right? Those are two intersecting, like, identity modes. And I'm sure for you, there is a hierarchy to those two beliefs, right? There's one that it's going to be influence your identity, and it's in primarily, right? And so, and for all of us, there's those different things. And I wonder how many people are actually aware of how the interplay of the different demographics and identities that they have come together in that. And I guess I feel like not a lot of people are aware of of how those different things come together to influence what they believe. So do you experience that in your life?
Yeah, I'm sitting here being like, yeah, that's so interesting. Cause I totally agree. I feel like people don't spend enough time maybe thinking about how the way they grew up influences what they think, or where they grew up, I think is also a really big thing. Like everything from the town you grew up in to your family structure to your, you know, if you're a Catholic to your parish, if you're not Catholic to whatever faith community you had or didn't have, what school you went to, those things influence you so much. And I feel like not enough people sit and think like, maybe the reason I think this is because I went to this kind of high school. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the reason I think this is because I had this kind of family structure. Like not enough people sit and really think through their identity like that. And then when they hear someone who disagrees with them, it's like, how could you possibly think that? And it's like, I don't know, because they grew up in an entirely different place than you did, surrounded by people who are very different from you. And that's why they have radically different thoughts. Like that seems obvious to me, but I definitely didn't always think like that. So trying to have grace with people, but I think it's important. It's definitely important to think through that and think of your own various identities, because we all bring so much to the table, and you can't like siphon out one of your identities. Like it's impacting you whether you know it or not. So I think that's fascinating kind of.
And for me, like that really connected with her conversation around like, and these weren't the words she used, but she was talking about the importance of like, shutting up and listening. Right. Which I in both mm-hmm. conversations. And I think it shows so much about not only like the good that we should be experiencing in the concept of feminism and intersectional feminism, but like what we need in a society as a whole that I think women are uniquely good at that men are just so horrible at. Like so many men I know, and I know women who are the same way, cause I don't want to paint everybody with a broad class, but generally men I know can't wait to own the conversation, and women are so much better at listening to the other person and then responding from an informed standpoint. And again, on both sides, there's people who do both things to varying degrees of
right. I mean, obviously you can't really talk without making generalizations. You have right. to make generalizations to talk about gender.
That came up and there's such a humility in that. Like, and so Devin named that really clearly, like humbling yourself and really kind of putting yourself not only in the shoes of the other person, but kind of like finding yourself and the other person a little bit, like actually listening to them in such a way that allows you to understand their story and where it connects with yours and where it diverges and where they may be an expert and you may not be, right? These are things that take real humility because they require you to know your own limitations. And I think that was just something that stood out to me amazingly well that I don't think happens enough in our world today.
Yeah, I loved what she was saying about the importance of asking people about their experiences, because I think including like in the Catholic Church and in the church in general, faith life, people just need to ask women what they need. Like, I wish that just more people asked women what they felt was lacking within the Catholic Church. People are so... It's so okay to be like, I don't agree with that solution, or I don't understand why you think that's a negative thing. Like, you don't have to agree, but there's this fundamental base of listening that gets skipped over. And I don't know if it's because people are afraid that they're going to disagree or what, but being able to share about your experience is so important and powerful. It kind of reminds me of this time. I had a guy friend, like, joking about a girl whose tank top was kind of low cut, and he used the word slutty, and I got super offended and mad right away, and I got super defensive and was like, how could you say something like that? And then I realized I had to kind of come back to him and really break down for him, hey, did you know that someone has told me before that I looked slutty because of what I was wearing? And did you know that it made me feel X, Y, and Z, and that word has a lot of power and that it's really hurtful? And like, I just didn't know if you knew that I had that experience. And he was like, so apologetic. Like, he wasn't this huge jerk who was just going around being like, women suck. But he'd never had that experience. Like, he's never been called a slut. So he didn't understand. And I think that takes humility on the side of the women too. You know, it's easy to get mad and be like, men suck and they don't understand. Well, sometimes they do suck. And a lot of times they don't understand, but we're not called to only be kind and loving to people who get us, right? So I think explaining our own experiences is just super important.
And I think one of the and also because when men are slutty, like people just think like that's what men do. Like it's just, yeah. It's like men are sexual beasts. And so therefore like, they're just being men, as opposed to like being like, no, like if it's, regardless of what it is, right? And people are going to have very different feelings about this depending on who they are. Either you should apply the standard to both genders or neither when it comes to some of those measures and those metrics, especially around sexuality. Like as somebody with a background in youth ministry, like I was like, my friends thought I was insane for providing both like women's bathing suit, like expectations and boys' bathing suit expectations. They're like, why would you do that? What's a boy going to do? Wear a Speedo? And I was like, maybe. Like, but if it's an issue for one, it's got to be an issue for both. Like, otherwise, I either got to let it go entirely or like I've got to provide guidelines for both. And I'm very clear that like when I do that, I'm going to do it for both because I do have an expectation that's not like insane. Like, I'm not like everybody wears like, you know, 1950s style bathing gowns, right? Nor do I want, you know, anybody on either side to feel uncomfortable or like they have to perform for the opposite gender, right? And so that's the big thing for me. And that's like, as you were talking, like one of the things that really jumped out at me. The last thing that that like really jumped out at me from her, and it was a huge thing that informed so much of what I loved about the conversation, was this phrase that she threw out around Jesus, right? And I'm always interested to talk to people about their perception of the church and specifically of Jesus, if they're not Catholic or Christian, even if they are. Like, I think it's really interesting. But she said that Jesus was the person who inserted love and forgiveness into the lexicon of humanity. And like, that was just so mind-blowing to me to hear from her, especially as somebody who doesn't necessarily believe in God. Hold on just one second, Claire, before you say anything. Yes.
I'm leaving.
Okay.
Upstairs, they're kind of cooking, but they're not really.
Okay.
I'm sure. Made a mess. And you probably need to make sure they actually need something significant.
Okay. All right. I love you. I'll be done in just a minute. All right. Sorry. I know.
No worries. Family life.
She said it out to her small group for the night. So, All right. So, inserting love and lexicon of forgiveness into the lexicon of humanity. That's what I said. Now I want you to respond.
Yeah, that is a really beautiful way to word it. I also really love to hear what people thought about Jesus because he was so radical for the time. And I think that the way she worded that was so just so good and so interesting. And it's crazy to me how many times things happen today in the modern world where, not to get all like 1990s church kid, but sometimes I just want to pass out WWJD bracelets a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like when you see, like on my podcast, we recently had someone from the Christendom Advocacy and Support Coalition talking about a rape that had taken place at Christendom College. And she was saying that some of the responses online were like, well, why would a woman get in a car with a man? Like, what was she expecting? And it's like, oh my gosh, what do you think Jesus would say to that? Like, you just want to yell that in people's faces a little bit.
Flipping over tables and like beating people with whips is an option.
Yeah. Sometimes I just want to flip some tables and hand out some WWJD bracelets. Just think that would solve a lot of issues.
No, and I will say I don't want to put too much into it. Like a couple of years ago, Penn Jillette, who's a noted atheist and skeptic, right, from Penn and Teller, talked about for him the importance of evangelism, right, and why people should evangelize what they believe. And it's this great talk. I show it in my confirmation classes when we talk about the gift of courage and the importance of witness. So many mega churches put it up and they're like, Penn Jillette converted, which was not at all part of the video. It's very clear. Like, I'm not converting. Like, here's why. And he had another video like a month and a half later where he was just railing and just upset and angry, rightfully so, about the manipulation of his words. And I don't want to do that with what happened with Devin. So I want to be very clear about that. But I think one of the things that made Devin's interview one of my favorite ones ever was the conversation we had was phenomenal. She was so filled with joy and hope, which I just like, especially in her line of work, like hopefulness seems so hard. And I was so impressed by that with her and just the joy that she was to have on. But at the end, like when we finished praying, right? Like, and she was like, can we pray for, can we add one thing? Right. And then this is somebody who doesn't necessarily believe it, that Jesus was the Son of Man. She believes in a sense of connectedness. She's definitely spiritually alive and aware, but she threw out a pretty strong intercessory prayer as an unbeliever. And the amount of like faith that takes to just be open to that, to be willing to not just be prayed for, but say, here's the thing I would like to ask of God, who I don't know if I believe in, was so impressive to me and took so much strength. And just, it was a beautiful moment. I don't know that for me, there's a more beautiful moment that I've had in the 30-ish episodes of this podcast so far than her willingness to say, oh, look, I don't know if I believe this, but I do want to offer this. And I don't know that I can thank her enough for just being able to be in that space with her during that conversation where she was willing to do that. And so I don't want to Devin's converted. No, but that willingness is something that I was thoroughly impressed by and honored by to just be present for it.
Yeah, that I thought that was awesome too. And she's just like a real, like you said, just being real joyful. I don't know how anyone who has to talk about politics that much could be that joyful. I feel like I can't even watch the news anymore. So like I thought that was really her joy and her articulation and just respect, you know, like we obviously, I think when you say you're Catholic, it's pretty clear that you guys disagree on some fundamental things, but it was just a very good, respectful, heartfelt conversation. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no. And like I said, I was such a joy. And I in my mind, I'm just like, how can I do like, and that's the hardest thing about my show is like, I get to talk to you once, you know, like that's the thing for most people, like I'll interview you once. And unless some major thing shifts in your life, I will talk to you again, but I'll never have you on my show again as a guest. And that's like, I would love to figure out another way to do things with Devin in the future. Cause she was from the very beginning, just such a delight and such a joy in the way that she emailed back and forth with me and her preparedness for the interview and the conversation we had that was just super honest and vulnerable and real. And I loved it. It was so, so great. So if you had something you wanted to say to Devin or a question you would want to ask her that I didn't get a chance to, what would that be?
That's a really good question. Maybe I would ask her if she sees, she's obviously like a very proud Democrat, and I don't prescribe to any one political party by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been reading a lot about just the entrenchment of the parties and how neither are really willing to bend. I'm wondering if she thinks that there's any wiggle room within the Democratic Party for pro-life issues, like what she would think about if someone aligned with the party in all these ways, but then happened to be pro-life, if she thinks that there's like any room for them in that party. Cause I think there's just a lot of people right now who don't feel like there's room for them in politics. And I would just be interested to hear her thoughts on like litmus tests of parties.
Yeah. Well, and actually, we have an extra piece of Patreon content where I talked to Devin a little bit about kind of what Democrats could learn from Republicans and what Republicans could learn from Democrats. And I actually think from a religious standpoint, it actually said a lot about what I love about the church. It had to do with falling in love and falling in line and how those things interact with each other. And it was a really, really cool part of that conversation also. Claire, it's been so great to talk to you also too. I hope we get to have you on as a guest sometime in the future post baby number two.
Absolutely.
If people want to find you on the internet in the wide, wide world, if they want to hear more about the Catholic Feminist Podcast or anything else you've got going on, where do they go for that?
Yeah, you can just head right over to thecatholicfeministpodcast.com. That has all our social media links and where you can listen to the show and where you can reach out to me. It's all on one website at thecatholicfeministpodcast.com.
And if you want to find out more about The Threshold, you can go over to thresholdpodcast.fm, or you can check us out on Facebook. We've got a great Facebook discussion group where you can talk about this episode or any of the other episodes we had. It's been so great to do this two-part series on how feminism, faith, belief, and all those different things interact and connect with each other. And I want to thank New Claire, thank Devin and Destiny for being a part of this experiment that we went on. And it was so helpful for me to have a better understanding of what's happening out there in the world today from a feminist standpoint. And I don't know if it made me more of a feminist. I would like to think that it made me a better one and made me a better ally and supporter of the intersectional feminist cause, especially. But no matter who you are, no matter what's your perspective on these things, we'd love to have you connect with us either on any of the things I just mentioned, or you can check us out on the dark web, by which I mean Twitter, which I just got back onto. @ThreshPod is the handle there. But until next time, I'd encourage you guys, get out there, F ineffability, and talk about what really matters.